dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark DiValenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark DiValenti, and this is another episode of Brain Burrow. This is a digging deep session where we have a chance to talk with our guest. Our guest has a chance to share about their values, their fears, their motivation. And then you as a listener and viewer have a chance to say, how does this apply to me? So I'm very pleased to have on the show a fellow Pittsburgher, Mark Cantu, and I'm actually going to hand it over to him by asking him the big open-ended question, who exactly is Mark Cantu?
I try to figure that on a daily basis myself. I always try to struggle with that. But if I'm being completely honest, I am someone who is finally in touch with who I actually am. An artist first and foremost, but then at the end of the day, really just trying to make everything that I do count with whatever art we kind of serve up every single day, and trying to translate whatever I may be going through emotionally into the artwork as well. Because what I've found is as much as it's therapeutic for me to kind of put myself into my work and kind of talk about, you know, my past, my trauma, it's equally as therapeutic for people who have actually watched our movies. So I try to be someone who's very accessible and very real upfront, whether it's in, you know, Facebook posts, whether it's, you know, in my movies, in my work, in my script, in my writing. And I just try to be someone who is extraordinarily accessible every single second of every single day. So it's kind of like that actor thing where it's like, just be present in everything that you do, no matter what, and the rest will take care of itself. So.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer, Mark. And I want to, you know, not surprisingly, you're very candid about your answer because that's exactly what I see about you on social media. You're very transparent, accessible, and obviously that's very important to you.
It is. And it's one of those things where I think, how are we with like harsh language in this? So
It's rated E for explicit. So whatever it is you want to say, but thanks for asking.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I tend to not try to bullshit myself. Just because I did that for so long and you carry so much baggage with things. And I got to a point about 5 years ago where I was just like, you know what? I can't carry this bag of just crap around with me anymore. And so to me, it's just, it really is genuinely about just be yourself every single day. And like I said, just try to figure out as you go along and, you know, try to improve every day. But if I can help it, and sometimes I'm going to step forward and sometimes I'm going to step back and, you know, I don't always have the answers for everything, but yeah, I definitely try to, like I said, it's definitely been more rewarding now as I've gotten older to finally understand who I am and finally understand what drives me. Cause I think for a long time I had myself kind of fooled, like you carry the baggage of like your family and your, you know, your older relatives. And I got to a point where it was, you know what, that's their baggage, that's their issues, not mine. And it takes such a long time to kind of differentiate between all of that crap and then, you know, who you actually are. And so at this point, like I said, it's rewarding for me to say, you know, this is who I am and this is what I'm going to be, you know, every single day moving forward. So, and just let everything else fall where it does. So.
Yeah, it's very powerful what you're saying right now. And it also seems, and you can tell in your voice that you found a certain peace with this. So, and again, and I invite you to share whatever it is you feel like you want to share. And again, that's up to you. You mentioned about 5 years ago, it sounds like that was a tipping point for you. What exactly happened 5 years ago that made you say, I am going to put down this baggage of the past?
I was at a point where we had literally just moved, probably within about a year, we had just moved up from Texas to Pittsburgh. And I literally didn't have any friends. I didn't have anybody up here. And I had kind of, before I had left San Antonio, I had started drinking pretty heavily and I had started, you know, and I'd had an eating disorder for a long time. And so it got to the point where those two things were not only competing with each other for attention, but they were also trying to do as much damage as possible because I had gotten to a point where it was like, there was no friends. There was no, like we were in a brand new city. I didn't know anybody. And so the level of feeling isolated and alone was off the charts. And so I got to a point where it was pretty much literally every other day. And I think I've probably posted about this, but it was literally every other day almost, where it was about 3/5 of a bottle of rum by myself till about, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and just doing things that I shouldn't be doing, and, you know, just not focusing on my family. And it got to the point where I got pretty low. I got violent, and I got to the point where I was just like, you know what? I can't do this to my family. And I also can't do this to myself. And you realize pretty quickly that a lot of that behavior is because you don't like yourself, and you don't want to see yourself happy. You don't want to, and you kind of go through that whole thing. And I started to realize that the one thing that I was terrified of was probably going to come true, which was being left alone. And that was a big fear after my parents had passed away. Really just, I didn't want to be alone with myself. And I think that was the thing that terrified me the most. And so it felt like if I didn't get my shit together really quick, I was going to be alone with myself. And I couldn't deal with that. And so I finally decided, I was like, you know what, if everything's going to be torn away and everything's going to fall apart, at the very least, if I am left by myself, then I have to have some sort of peace inside. I got to find out where this is all coming from. I got to make my peace with some of the things that I've done. And I started to not be afraid of being alone anymore with myself. And during that process, as you realize that you're not afraid of being alone with yourself, then you start to come to that realization of like, well, actually, I do care about myself now. And I do give a shit about my own happiness. And I do, you know, I want to be happy as much as possible. And that is a huge kind of turning point mentally, at least it was for me. And you get to that point and you go, you know what? No, I do deserve to actually be happy. And you start to believe it finally, you know, for the first time in your life. So, but that was a huge point. And that was about like 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm going to commend you and affirm you for the actions you took and sort of getting out of that downward spiral. I mean, it's not easy, you know. Obviously addiction, no matter what type of addiction, is pretty difficult to climb out of, obviously, as you know, quite personally.
I think, like I said, there's a lot of people, and I know, and I can't speak for everybody else's, you know, version of addiction or anything like that. Sometimes it's a chemical imbalance, sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. And for me, it was partially a chemical imbalance because of the eating disorder. You know, it's literally throwing your body makeup all out of whack. But once you stop doing that, I realized, I mean, I have a drink every now and then now, but I can feel an actual difference in whenever I drink now, where it's like, I'm not doing this to kill myself. I'm not doing this to kill some sort of pain. And I can feel a massive difference. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, then for me, at least from my personal experience, it was never the drink. It was the intention behind the drink. It was the intention of, you know, I don't want to see myself happy. I deserve to. And it was kind of like anyone who, you know, cuts themselves, right? It was just a lot of self-harm. And it was definitely, like I said, it took a while. It took about a year to finally get to that point, to finally say, you know what, that's why I was doing this, and this is why I felt like I shouldn't be happy and I didn't deserve any of that stuff. So, but like I said, it definitely takes a lot of kind of being alone with yourself and just being quiet and listening to yourself for a change. So,
yeah, that's extremely insightful as well, right? Everything starts with self-insight and self-realization and spending that time doing that. And I think, again, I just want to affirm you again for that. And also, I think you brought up a really good point too. It's not something that all of a sudden, like, okay, all of a sudden I'm better. It sounds like the process itself of kind of realization, going through and realizing more and more, and then climbing your way out, took a while.
Yeah. Even to today. I mean, like I still have problems, and I still, you know, have, you know, anger issues, and I still have to deal with, you know, saying the wrong thing sometimes.
Sure.
It's less intense than it used to be, but I feel like I've kind of gotten to a point where if everything were to go away today, I'd be okay with it. And whether I was not making movies anymore, or, you know, I was literally just having to do an 8-9-to-5 job, and I was stuck by myself in some shithole apartment by myself because everyone left, I would be okay with that. I would be like, you know what, there are worse there are worse things to have happen to you, you know, and I've been through some of those things. So it doesn't scare me to be alone with myself anymore. So.
And that's incredible, right? It sounds like you've really faced your fear and sort of accepted what could happen, and you're okay with it, basically.
Yeah. And you know what? It's one of those things where I feel like you get to that point, like I said, where you realize that that at least for me, 3/4 of my issues and 3/4 of my, you know, anger and my insecurities didn't even come from me. You know, it was a lot of the house that I was raised in. I will preface it by saying this. My parents were amazing. My parents, like, I wasn't like a completely abused child or anything like that. I think my parents made some mistakes, you know, kind of raising my brother and I. My brother was the abusive one, and my brother was the one that was, you know, constantly telling you're not loved, you're not this, you're not that, and there was a lot of physical abuse. And so the only way you can kind of figure out a way to survive that type of situation is to fight back and to use those things as armor. And I realized that, you know, after a while, those things those weren't actually me. That was just a way of figuring a way out to survive in my house. At least kind of sharing a room with that type of person. But I think, you know, my parents, I definitely, like I said, I love my parents. They were amazing people, but I don't think that they did enough diligence in maybe getting my brother some help and, you know, kind of helping him unpack his crap, because it pretty much got unpacked on me. And I was put through, you know, walls when I was a kid and, you know, choked and, you know, punched and it was just a lot of stuff that just was unnecessary. But you hear that enough and you go, yeah, I fucking believe that I'm not loved and I'm not worthy and I'm full of crap and I'm fat and, you know, and I don't sing well and I don't, like, all these things, like, you hear constantly and you're like, okay, well, yeah, that's fair. I deserve it because I'm terrible. And then you get to the point where you go, actually, that wasn't me. That was all you. And that's your, I hope you're okay with that baggage because you got to deal with that, not me. So, but yeah, that's kind of the point where I'm at now.
Well, and again, I think, you know, lots of people kind of go through similar struggles in their formative years where the people that are supposed to be there, protect them, are the ones hurting them. But what's incredible though about you is that you made the choice and choices to sort of put that baggage down over time, especially. So again, I think that's the amazing part. And again, lots of credit is deserved to you to make that choice.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I think one of the things that has helped, because anytime I'm in doubt, anytime I feel like maybe I'm hitting a brick wall or maybe I will be very vocal about it. And I'll be vocal on Facebook and, you know, and Instagram, is I will kind of let it back out there to let everybody else kind of know, like, hey, just so you know, like, maybe I'm feeling this and I don't want to feel alone. So I want to make sure that nobody else feels that either. And like I said, I try to be very vocal about it. And I feel like that's part of the therapy as well, as kind of giving voice to it and not being afraid of it. And, you know, even if it is, I feel like sometimes we get so caught up in, well, I don't want to admit that I'm wrong. I don't want to admit that I'm, you know, and to me, I think that's the best part sometimes. Like, I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, I'm terrible. I suck at that. And good for that, you know, but how do I move on from there? How do I fix that? How do I, you know, because to me, it's, you have to be honest with yourself before you can be honest with anybody else. Cause otherwise, like I said, I bullshitted people for years and that didn't get me anywhere, you know? So why would I keep doing that? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me to do that and be that kind of person anymore. So
I think, you know, in listening to you, it's really about accepting the fallibility of human beings, right? It's about accepting that we're not perfect and being okay with that and not beating yourself up. In fact, as you said, it's kind of the beauty of it. It's actually call them fabulous failures. It's hard, you accept it and you learn from it, right? The other thing I want to commend you on is that you mentioned that sometimes you take a drink, but not, again, to the point to escape reality, kind of drown out the fears and all the feelings. But you do that in a way that's you do it socially or whatever it is because you like the taste of it, whatever the reasons are, right? It's different. But what's important about the fact that you do that is a lot of people struggle if they've had struggles with drinking, for instance, and they stay away from it forever. Like they make the intent to stay away from it. And then inevitably at some point they take a drink and they feel like they've screwed up their entire lives again. You know, so they try to hold themselves almost to this black and white thinking where it's all or nothing. So it takes a lot more emotional intelligence and skill to do what you're doing, which is to say, it's not all or nothing thinking. It's I'm going to do right. this because I choose to do it in this specific case. So that's, I want again, how did you get to that point? Because that's pretty remarkable.
I mean, that's it. Yeah. To be fair, I mean, I did stave off drinking for about a year. So I wanted to get to the point where I was like, I don't want to, and I think you're absolutely right. I was always that type of person before I crashed. It was a lot of all or nothing. It was a lot of black and white. It was a lot of, and I got to the point in my kind of therapeutic kind of thinking where it was like, why does it have to be black and white? Why can't there be levels of things? And why can't I be responsible with myself and, you know, with everybody else? And I didn't allow myself to have that for a long time. And then I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to at least have one and that's fine. And it was my way of kind of just kind of dipping my toe back in and seeing, am I responsible enough to do it? Because if not, it was just one drink and I can go right back over the fence and that's fine. But once I did that, there wasn't that compulsion to go have another one and then have another one after that. There wasn't that need driving it anymore. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. And so I had one and I was like, I think I'm actually okay. Like, I don't need another one. And I went a few days without even really feeling the need to do it again. And then like, there was another opportunity and I was like, you know what? Yeah, maybe, you know, but again, there was never, after that, there was no push internally to destroy anything. And I could feel that change because I had felt it so intensely for so long, is that as I started to kind of go back and I felt like I was okay doing it socially, there wasn't that need to destroy everything. So I was like, I think I can trust this a little bit. And I've got a bit of a radar now where I've kind of gone a couple of times where I've kind of gone to the edges a little bit and I'm like, oh, no, I need to stop. Like that's too much. And, you know, luckily there haven't been any real nights where I've gone back and, you know, gone right back to what I used to be. And, you know, it hasn't crashed like that. And I think it's just, it's my way of letting myself be okay with, you know, if something does happen, it's okay. Then you just pick up and we'll move on and we'll kind of recoup and, you know, and that's the way I approach every single day now at this point.
Yeah. And I think, again, it's remarkable that you're at that point of self-awareness and self-management of your emotions. And I would say you said, luckily you didn't fall into that, but I would say it's not luck, right? I mean, you put yourself there because of the choices you made and the self-reflections you do. And again, the acceptance that if you do quote unquote screw up, that you can come back from it. And I think, again, that says a lot about where you are. Also, clearly you talk about your films and the art that you do. You call yourself an artist and you see this translating, you know, who you are into
so
your
pompous,
art.
Right? If I call myself an artist.
That's right. No, I think that's exactly what you are. And I think, but it also sounds like you've also channeled some of this energy of who you are into your art, which is another very effective way of dealing with things. So can you talk a little bit about how it translates into your art?
Yeah. I mean, I've always, when I got to rock bottom, I kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what? I had just had probably the biggest failure that I've ever had artistically and commercially. I had done a movie when I got up here to Pittsburgh and I was drinking at the time. I shouldn't have been making a movie. I was in the wrong headspace. And that movie rightfully got hammered by everybody. And it was just like, this is terrible. This is dog shit. And I read pretty much every negative review about myself, comparing myself to Hitler, the Holocaust. I mean, like there was some brutal stuff and I was like, wow, maybe I shouldn't do movies anymore. And you know what? And it was one of those things where I legitimately, I got to the point where I stopped drinking. And I told my wife at one point, I was like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. I'm like, what's the point? There's no desire for me to get better. Like, I just want to focus on me. I've got way too many issues to deal with. So like, I have no energy for a movie right now. And I got to the point where, as I kind of started to do a lot of analysis, I could still feel something there. And it was a lot of painting with my daughter. It was a lot of, because I painted and I drew when I was a kid. And I mean, I was always creative. I was always working on stuff. And I knew at that point, eventually it was going to come back out. I just didn't know how. But I knew that that was a part of me that wasn't ever going to leave. That was definitely part of me. That was definitely me from the beginning of time, you know, from day one. So I knew eventually I would go back into it. I just didn't know how. Whether it was making movies, whether it was drawing, painting, you know, trying to play an instrument, being on stage again, I didn't know how. And eventually I got to the point where I was like, not only do I think I can do this and I can do it well and I can behave myself, but I can also be extraordinarily responsible on a movie set, and I can treat everybody with respect, and I can be a leader finally, because for the longest time I didn't want to be a leader, even though I was a director. I didn't see myself as a leader, because you always get that imposter syndrome where you're like, everyone sees through you, everyone knows you're full of shit. What's the point? And so I got to the point in kind of dealing with myself where I was like, you know what? I can actually do this. And I was born to do this, and I can do it well, and I can actually lead people. And so in that growth and that therapy, I actually did get really comfortable with becoming a leader finally for the first time in my life, which is an odd thing to say for a director, but I felt like I was responsible enough to be that person finally. And by that point, I went out and did like one short film, and I was like, and that was probably the easiest, the smoothest thing that I've ever done. And I came back home and I was like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, this, hands down, I know where I'm supposed to be. And within about 3 weeks after that, that's when I had Massacre Academy. Like, and it literally came that quick. So, and I was like, wow, okay. Yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay, great. So let's get back to it, you know? And then after that, you just start using the art to talk about the things that I've been through. I mean, if you look at Massacre, our lead character, Chris, she's going through a lot of trauma. She's trying to unpack all of her crap. And to me, it was my way of kind of writing myself out of that hole and just going, okay, how the fuck do I get out of here? Because that is her journey. Like, she goes from absolute rock bottom to getting herself back out of into the light at the end of the movie. And you're just like, you know, yeah, you've earned that. And you've kind of come to terms with the damage that you have. And you're not letting anybody use that against you anymore. You're actually using that to your own advantage, and you're able to acknowledge that weakness if you need to. So,
yeah. And that's another theme, as I've heard you talk today, right? It's about naming emotions, you know, not ignoring them, just sort of calling them out, putting them out there. And just sort of, a lot of times our cognitive distortions, what we fear is going to happen is a billion times worse than actually is there. And again, it sounds like there's a huge power in just putting it out there, naming it for everybody to see. And it's not as bad as we think.
Yeah, and it's not. And that's, I think that's the thing, is that, like I said, that's what therapy kind of teaches you, is just to kind of really be specific about what you're feeling. And one of the things that's always gotten me through this is, and again, this is my own little device of how I've kind of thought of everything and conceptualized it, is I always thought of my depression and my anxiety and my angst and all that. I always felt like when I was drinking, I always felt like it was okay. Now it's taking over, and now it's going to drive, and now it's going to power the ship. And that's, you know, and I had to just somehow feed off of it. Otherwise it would just destroy me. But I got to the point where, as I would feel those things come up, and I would feel the anxiety, or I would feel the depression, I got to the point where I would say, you know what? I'm not going to let you drive, but I'm going to let you sit in the co-pilot seat, and we're going to sit here, and I'm going to continue to drive this, but I'm going to let you, but I'm going to acknowledge that you're here with me. And that's okay. Like, if you want to look out the window and watch, that's cool, but you're not going to take control of the ship. And so that was my way of kind of, as I would get through a day, if I would be driving back home, you know, I would kind of come into my wife and I would be like, yeah, I'm just kind of depressed right now. Like, I'm not mad at you. I'm not going to take it out on you, but it's there right now. And I just want you to know that it's there. So I'm going to go sit with it for a little bit. And that has helped me tremendously to think of it, like I said, as something that I can kind of put my arm around and just go, that's all right. You know, it's perfectly fine. And it's that weird kind of like, it's like a Buddhist mentality or a Buddhist concept where it's like everything that starts eventually ends. And whatever that pain is, whenever it started, eventually it's going to dissipate and it's going to stop. And it may come back up again. It may, and that's, you'll ebb and flow with it. That's fine. But you have to acknowledge, like I said, it started, and that situation that you're in right now is not permanent. So just allow it to be there with you. Don't let it, you know, take control and drive your actions, but acknowledge that you're feeling that right now, you know?
Yeah. Well said. And I love the analogy about the co-pilot, right? You're not kicking it out the door because it's part of you in some way. So you're just saying it's there, but you're acknowledging it. And I think that's a fantastic visual.
And I think that's that self-acceptance where it's, you know, you kind of get to that point where you just go, all of my emotions are part of me and right. I can't do away with them. I can't, you know, just throw them away. I don't have to be necessarily governed by them every single second of every single day, but right. I have to acknowledge that they're happening, you know, and even if it's just for myself and it's not sometimes it's not even external. It's not in a conversation I have with anybody else. I will sit there sometimes and just literally be in silence and just go, all right, I'm really depressed right now. All right, cool. Moving on. And let's kind of pick up and figure out the rest of the day. So like I said, it is a conversation that I have internally all the time and it doesn't go away. So,
yeah. Well, and again, and it sounds like, as you said, it's part of you and it's that acceptance. And I think, again, it's very powerful. We are actually out of time. You actually had a lot of fantastic points today. I would actually normally probably end the show by asking you what bit of advice you may have for people, but it sounds like you shared a lot of fantastic advice for people who may be watching or listening, unless there's anything else you want to add to that.
I would say be yourself and let the art speak for itself. Hmm. That's the best thing I can say.
That sounds like a fantastic quote that may appear in the body of this podcast and out there. So yeah, right? Exactly. Well, Mark, I want to thank you today for being extremely accessible, as you say, and sharing about your life and a lot of very helpful tidbits for people, not even just tidbits, from some strategies on how to kind of navigate life. And it was very powerful. So thank you for being on the show today.
It was my pleasure, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure as well. So I want to thank the listeners and viewers out there for tuning in today. And on behalf of Mark Cantu, this is Mark DiValenti for Brain Burrow. Have an amazing rest of your day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.